Hello, and welcome to Two Bald Men Fighting Over a Comb, a new podcast in which two chrome-down malcontents skip to the Fountain of Knowledge, take a sip, and then gag. I'm Rob Elvin, alongside the artist formerly known as Tom. So, Tom, what's been tickling your brain teats?
I wanted to talk to you, Rob, about another Rob, Robert De Niro, and his friend Al Pacino.
What, their movies they've made together, or...?
No, not the movies. We could do that another day, maybe. But they've both recently fathered children, despite their ages. So
was it 79 for? Is it 79 for Robert De Niro?
Yeah, he's 79, and Al Pacino's at the grand old age of 83.
Goodness me!
And it's this week, in fact. So De Niro's girlfriend is Tiffany Chen, and she's 45, so a bit nearer his age. And Al Pacino's is a lady called Noir Alfala, and she's 29 years old.
Yeah, she used to date Mick Jagger back in 2017, I think.
That's a thing for the older men.
Yeah, long balls. Must be that. On the subject of Mick Jagger, he fathered his eighth child back in 2016 when he was 73. And then he also had Rupert Murdoch. He was 72.
It's like a competition, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And then Jon Snow, not the guy from Game of Thrones, but the now-retired newsreader, he became father again at the age of 74.
OK. So we're going up by one year, and then Al Pacino comes along and just smashes it out of the park. And
well, literally, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, we're a 29-year-old lady. It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
So is this what it is? You've got gripes against these decrepit old men who are still maintaining these sexual relations with these fine-looking women.
Yeah, jealousy. No, I was thinking about it, and, you know, do people have a right to have children? The World Health Organization says everyone has the right to choose whether to have children or not, to decide freely the number, spacing and timing of children. Everyone has the right to get information available, education and support to make make decisions about having children.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, you can understand, obviously, that they have to have that broad brush because it's the world or the health organisation, isn't it? And then you could tiptoe or you could look towards the whole thing about human rights as well, because really, is there such thing as human rights? I know it's off-piste a little bit, but when you think about, you know, everyone's born equal, well, no, they're not. You know, it's obviously in the American Constitution as well, and people are just not born equally, unfortunately. And it could be, in the example from obviously Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, I'm certain that as you get older, the sperm would deteriorate in some manner.
Research shows a definite impact on the offspring of older fathers. So there's an increase in something called achondroplasia, which is a type of dwarfism.
That's one hell of a Scrabble score as well.
That is quite good, yeah, if you get it on a triple word. In the general population, 1 in 15,000 children will have achondroplasia. With fathers over 50, it rises to 1 in 1,900. So it drastically, I mean, it's still quite long odds, but it drastically lowers the odds. I think it's the quality of the sperm as men get older, with mutations of the cells that create the sperm. I think in the general population, for fathers under 50, their children have a 1 in 100 chance of developing schizophrenia in a lifetime. But that reduces drastically to 1 in 22 for when a father's over 50.
It'd be interesting to know about fathers over 70, you know, what those are. Because, I mean, 50 to 70, 50 to, like, 80, that's like 30 years of deterioration, because I guess it's to do with the DNA structure of these sperms.
Yeah, the cells that they're produced from aren't as good. There are going to be more sperm that aren't firing on all cylinders, shall we say.
Yeah.
There's also a heightened risk of bipolar, breast cancer. So, yeah, I mean, these are things that have been studied. But like you say, there's a lot more to be studied. There are, you know, different age groups. So you sort of look at that and you think, OK, so the person who's having kids has a right, you know, or you might think they have a right to have kids no matter what their situation. But, you know, where the odds get longer, or the odds get shorter.
Well, the balls get longer.
The balls get longer and the odds get shorter for a child that's to be had, to be unwell, have a disability, etc. It's like, where do the rights of the potential child versus the person who's having the child, where do, you know, which takes precedence? Mm. I mean, when you look at rights, you have negative rights. So that's the right not to be prevented to do something. So freedom of speech is a negative right. You've got a right not to be silenced. And then you've got positive rights. So positive rights is the right to do something. And so how far does it go? So a positive right would be a right to, say, IVF, you know, a right to have this thing that the healthcare offers. And often with older people, IVF and fertility assistance is needed for babies to be born, you know. So how far does that right extend? I mean, you know, are you going to be offering IVF to 60-year-old women, 70-year-old women, you know, if they haven't gone through their menopause? Or if older fathers, are you going to give them the right to pay for sperm selection, picking sperms that aren't degraded? There's just so many sort of ethical dilemmas around it. I mean, I doubt that, you know, you sort of can picture Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, you know, being the studs they are. They probably just
thought about it and she became pregnant.
There's a definite difference in how people are willing to accept these charismatic men, you know, Jon Snow, Mick Jagger, etc. You know, these guys are, you know, they're Lotharios, and, you know, they've been images of masculinity and sexiness, and they're having kids because they're older, and but they're still sexy. Whereas if it's the poorer, not necessarily good-looking man on a council estate somewhere having a kid, people are going to, you know, draw them over hot coals and, you know, sort of go around with pitchforks.
You can even widen it a little bit in terms from a money perspective to a social aspect, because that Al Pacino's child is going to, you would imagine, go to some form of private education. Oh, your dad's Al Pacino, there's that respect there and what have you. Now, in the example that you just used, you know, that the man in the council estate, when his child starts going to, you know, if he picks him up, it's going to be like, oh, your granddad's here. Oh, no, he's my dad. You know, or that thing of, goodness, he's not picking him up because of all the bugs and colds and all sorts of stuff that's going to be flying around with these kids, and it could potentially kill him.
Or because he can't get out of the house, you know, or he's waiting for the district nurse to come around and dress his ulcers.
Dress his sore balls. But, no, I mean, from a social point of view, that kid's going to have an awful amount of kind of piss taking to a certain degree, just from that social, you know, social class that he's in and all those different things. So so money's got a really big role to play in, because the papers, you know, none of them have covered it from that particular angle. There's always been like, oh, you know, there might have been a very small kind of question the comment is very much like, oh, you know, Robert De Niro, age 79, his father, child, and that's it. They allow you to kind of fill in the blanks with that, you know, your opinion. And, you know, people listening to this will have the same view, isn't it? And that's, you know, what we're trying to obviously say or discuss is very much like, not an opinion on whether it's right or wrong, but just trying to understand, like, the whole point of view from, you know, well, is it the media that kind of drives people's point of view?
Yeah, if they sledged, like, Al Pacino for, you know, for having a kid at 83, and they, you know, the son had run an article about how much of a dirty old man he is with such a young wife, and then, yeah, I think you'd see a lot of sort of echoes of that in other media, social media, etc. I think it's the mainstream media definitely directs opinion, and, you know, it can also sort of whip up a fervour amongst people. I mean, you know, look at, say, the death of Princess Diana and other events where there's sort of been a mawkish response.
Another example that I was thinking about was in terms of how the media have portrayed a story is the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. And, I mean, yes, it's a terrible story in terms of, you know, a child going missing, a three-year-old. They're both doctors. well-to-do, they were in a nice resort, white, upper class, you could say. Was that the reason that the media were to, you know, spent so much time, and why so much money has been spent? Because I think on average, the police spend about £2,500 is what the budget is looking for missing children. You then look at the Madeleine McCann case and it's gone over like 13 million, right? And so when you've got these other families who have missing children, like there was one in Great Yarmouth, Daniel Entwistle, he went missing, I think it was 2003, maybe. And he went to the shops, I think he was 7, on his bike, came back and then disappeared. They found his bike by the river, never been found since. It's still an open case at Norfolk Constabulary.
Never heard of him.
Well, this is it. You know, I think there was a little bit of a story, you know, when it did happen about, oh, you know, shame and all of those things. And not even just like missing children, but when you had that in January of this year, Nicola Bulley, the 40-something-year-old woman who went, you know, walked into the river, fundamentally. How many people go missing on a, you know, in a basis, on a weekly basis, let's say?
The certain ones are picked up, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, she's attractive. She's white. She's, you could say, middle class. So great. You know, there's that story, there's that intrigue, and we all know, obviously, how it all you know, transpired, and how everyone then got involved, like the social media detectives and what have you. But just using those as examples of how the media has kind of like portrayed those things. When you think about the Madeleine McCann case, as a parent myself, there's that question of like, well, what were you doing leaving your child in a room? Because regardless of being only 100 yards away and checking on them every half hour or whatever it is, right? You're in a foreign country. There's that element of care that you have to have in your children. And is that responsible? It was that a responsible thing to do, right? Did they feel entitled because they're both doctors? And it's like, well, that's not going to happen to us. And there's that whole thing of, you know, going back to the faulty sperm thing of like, you know, 1 in 22 chance of going to, you know, schizophrenia in your child. It's like, well, that won't happen to me. But when it does happen, it's like, oh my God.
I mean, they were very savvy operators, the Madeleine McCann's parents. I mean, okay, horrible things happened, but they were clever people who knew how to use marketing and the media to get their aim, which was to find their child.
But they didn't succeed, have they?
They didn't succeed, but, you know, it's in spite of their effort, isn't it? And, I mean, it is a lot of that down to they're always paying for that mistake.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, any person who, you know, loses a child or, you know, has to deal with the death of their child, you know, that's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. Of course it would, you know. And, you know, I pray that it never happens to me. But even, you know, even when I'm like a 83-year-old man trying to my hardest to seduce a 29-year-old carer into having one of my children... You know, you want to be buried before your children, you know, or burnt to a crisp. I don't know. Don't know how I want to go yet. Maybe shot out of the cannon. I think that'd be quite cool. But
that might burn you to a crisp.
Well, there won't be much of me, will it? I'll be like, I just turned to dust as soon as I left the cannon. You know,
I think you make quite a good projectile, Rob.
I would. Well, yeah. I'm a bit top heavy.
Your egg-headed dome. If we put some Semtex inside it.
I was going to say, because I feel I'm a bit, like, top heavy, so I wouldn't necessarily, you know, it'd be like one of those balls with a load of string hanging off the back. I'd look like a sperm. I'd almost, like, going back from once...
But you look like one of the 89-year-old sperms, 83-year-olds.
A lot of loose skin on me, yeah, flipping egg. That's the thing, the cannon would go off and the skin would go, and I'd have, like, a big... Almost, I'd look like one of those spelunkers or whatever it is, you know, those...
I've never heard of a spelunker.
You know those people who, they wear them suits that are like bats and stuff like that. They jump off and then glide. Yeah. I'd have all that loose skin on me, because obviously, you know, being a bit chunky and then losing it, I'd have all that excess skin. And it's like, you know, when the blast, you know, that'd take me and I'd be like, wow, Granddad's spelunking. But... yeah, who knows?
I've got a semi thinking about this, mate.
Yeah. No, I think, I don't know, there was a comedian I remember listening to, and he was saying that, like, terminally ill people, should be used as stuntmen and women in movies, because, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about CGI, you wouldn't have to do everything else. It'd be like, you know, it's an old lady, she's not very great, put her in a hoodie, give her a knife, shuffle her up to Chuck Norris, bang, and he literally kicks her head right off, you know. It's like, you couldn't get those kind of effects, and it's how she would have wanted to have gone. She's on film.
Going back to, like, the Madeleine McCann story, I think the thing which really caught me on it was the level and variety of how it was pushed. I mean, a variety of media and just examples for publicity. I mean, there were bookmarks in, well, I think I don't know if it actually happened, but they were sort of proposing bookmarks in Harry Potter books with her photo on it. There was stuff at football stadiums, you know, her picture coming up on project. It's just, there was a huge amount of money spent for this disappearance of this one girl, and it sort of plays into the whole thing of, if she was a black girl with poor parents, maybe she had a disability or something, just if she wasn't what she was, there wouldn't have been the interest from the public, fueled by, you know, papers like The Sun, etc. There wouldn't have been the money spent on it. There wouldn't have been the donations that kept the beast that was the publicity system around it going. It's not even, is it? I mean, do you think the media reflects us as a society? So do you think that we get what we deserve, and all this immoral shit that they put onto us, and the mawkish fervour they whip up in us when, you know, a royal dies or a white girl, middle class white girl goes missing. Do you think that's, rather than the media being a big shit on a stick, is that they're actually just reflecting what we are and what our prejudices are and showing it back to us?
I think, to a certain degree, there is a sense of the media holding a mirror up to us. I think it's become more of, like, I think the journalism has certainly degraded over time. It's more sensationalist, more kind of, because there's so many people wanting you to read their papers. You could always argue that newspapers is a dying form of media anyway. Everything's, you know, shifting to online, vlogs and podcasts. But when you think about, like, you know, human nature, you know, about Homo narins, you know, the stories and bring it, you know, and we were the first, well, we're the only ones that can bring up, you know, we can make it, we can tell a good story, we can make stuff up, you know, gods, you know, hundreds of, you know, thousands of gods and whatever it is, or, you know, stories of extravagant tales and everything else, and then people will believe them, or you know, people love a good gossip about, oh, well, that, you know, that member of that tribe over there, and, you know, it's that intrigue. And, you know, you could have a lot. I mean, it could boil down to the fact that, you know, the readership for these things, you know, they love a certain element of turmoil in their life. They like that thing to keep going. If you think about, like, the Jeremy Kyle show, bringing people on where they do this great big thing of, like, you know, arguing families, let's get them together, let's, you know, car crash TV. But ultimately, people are watching it just to see these people's lives potentially ruined. And I think, after, you know, there is a court case coming up about that, about how, you know, not necessarily it's a TV show, but they preyed upon these weak people and, you know, made them feel like, you know, criminals, and they were openly judged by the audience, like, boo. And it's like, well, you don't know the full story. Oh, but we do. And then Jeremy Kyle will, you know, weigh in, and, you know, and there's that whole thing about, you know, the moral high ground. But then really, behind closed doors, is everybody able to say that they're, you know, whiter than white, that they're, you know, a good person, that they should be the one that, you know, to pass judgment on anything else? But going back to your question, I think the media is, you know, I think it's lost its way in some respects in terms of saying, well, it's in the public interest. You know, and it's like, well, really, who cares? I mean, like the Agatha Christie trial.
I think going back to where you started, I think it's not necessarily to do with reporting a story. It's to do with how much it's reported and how long it stretches. You know, I think the thing that makes people uncomfortable is how long the whole case with Madeleine McCann stretched. The fact we're still talking about it today, many years after it happened. You know, if she were alive, she would be a teenager or in her early 20s now. I'm not sure about the exact dates, but it's just how long these things can be kept in the media and how it keeps getting pumped and pumped and pumped to sell papers. To wrap up the whole media thing, De Niro and Pacino, there's just an acceptance, one article and move on. So they maybe don't delve into a subject as much as they should do. And then on the other end of the scale, you have the case of Madeleine McCann, and they delve into it far too much and sort of stoke up, you know, what we've seen over the years. So it's like they're doing too much and too little.
Well, look, the thing is, they know that the Al Pacino story is not going to sell papers, but the intrigue and all the reporting on the slightest thing, say, you know, oh, I'm going to buy the newspaper, or I'm going to click on their website, you know, I'm going to, you know, read more and more, but there's no real story there. It's just this, you know, if you click on the Daily Mail, for example, or any of the gossipy type, you know, media outlets, it repeats the same thing over and over again, but you find yourself scrolling, 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 and they're making so much money. The final thing I want to say on Al Pacino and Robert De Niro is you think about their careers, and to a certain degree, there's almost that kind of, like, you know, one-upmanship, isn't it, in terms of who is the better actor and all that stuff. So obviously I'm having one at 79, while I'm having one at 83. I think the best contest that they can have is to see who's got the longest balls. I reckon it's Al Pacino, just because he's kind of got that kind of, like, more saggier skin appeal to him. You know, he's 83, he's got that. He's got four more years of gravitational pull on him than De Niro, you know.
So you're saying De Niro is more pert?
His coin purse that's more filled with coins.
They're both going to be dangling quite low because they've been in Heat.
Oh, yeah, the film, yeah. Oh. Right, the end of the last show, you very kindly did a quiz for me. So I thought I'd reciprocate. And I'm not very good at reciprocating or replicating. So there are five questions of general knowledge. Music is in there. I thought I'd throw two musical questions in there. The forfeit is you have to punch yourself in the nuts. Because we've talked about nuts so much, I thought, if you get it wrong...
The thing is, I'm quite old and I might not be able to reach them.
Well, sit down then. Just rest one on each kneecap. You'll be all right.
Just not on a slatted bench.
So what is the story about that? I heard that an old man had a shower. He was really hot, went to sit outside on the bench. And because his nuts are all long and warm, they fell through the slats. And then he's getting cooler. Then they start going back to, like, wherever it is. And then he went to get up. And it was like, oh, pulled him. Well, I was thinking if he was an old man, he probably got to the back door and he was whipped back like a bungee. Right, five questions, Thomas. First one is classical music. Forfeits is to punch yourself in the long socks, in the Frank and Beans. Right. Oh, first question.
Oh, I'm going to keep that in.
I'd like me.
That is not being edited out.
True or false? When a classical piece is referred to as, say, the first, second, or third movement, this actually relates to the number of shits the composer took to start and finish writing the piece.
Well, it probably takes quite a long time to write a piece of classical music. So unless they're very constipated, it's going to be more than one, two, or three movements. So I'm going to say false.
It's true, because in the old days, they didn't have toilet paper, so they had to literally let it dry and then chisel it off. Slap to the nuts. Second one is nature. Before the invention of light bulbs, some moths would attempt to fly to the sun, but would become exhausted and fall back down to earth to their deaths.
True.
It's false, Tom. They used to fly around campfires, didn't they, and stuff like that. Don't be silly. Why would they fly to the sun for? They won't be able to get out of the atmosphere. That's wrong, so... All right, next one is three. Come on, try and focus. It's roughly 300 miles from Norwich to Edinburgh. If you drove at 100 miles per hour, how long would it take to reach your destination?
An hour?
No, think about it. 300 miles, and you're travelling at 100 yes. miles per hour.
Oh, sorry. What's the sorry, let me think. Oh, wasn't listening
you're
to you.
Too busy concentrating on the pain in your balls. 3 hours. Yeah, no, three unfortunately, hours. It's 3.5 hours because there are works on the A17 at the moment, so you'd be held up by 30 minutes. So that is wrong. Slap. Hoo-yah! Hoo-wah! Right, number four. This is right up your alley. Oof, not talking about bumholes. No, it's the Adam's apple, right? And it's named after the fact that only men have it, true or false?
True.
No, it's false. It's named after the guy who found it, whose name was Adam Dickinson. Or whatever name I just made up. Oh, I'll let you have that one. I'll let you have that one. Oh, have I got... Oh, no. I just realised that, because when the insults, I got to insult you, so now I've got to whack myself in the... all right. Question five. Rodgers and Hammerstein's... Sorry. Rodgers and Hammerstein's first names were Jammy and Stop. So it would be Jammy Rodgers and Stop Hammerstein.
False.
No, it's true. It's true. Time. Sorry about that, Tom. I'll give your balls a break. Do we know what we're talking about next show?
Not yet, no.
So, the intrigue is there, listeners. We will be back.